Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, Twins. 8 o'clock pregame. Oakland A's, 8:35, first pitch right here in Newstalk 830 WCCO. Joining us in the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline, Joe Vavra, former hitting coach for the Minnesota Twins, Detroit Tigers. The American League right now, the average is 235. As they say in the old school, that ain't very good. Why are the averages so low now? And does that matter at all? Does that make it less entertaining, more entertaining? Is it about long ball? And yet you're seeing philosophically, Cleveland has decided to play small ball. And they're hitting 292 as a team. The Twins are now somewhere in between. We can't quite figure it out. Last night they played small ball. Some nights they're trying to hit home runs. It's hard to say. And you can't really do that by feel. You can't just say, oh, tonight we're going to hit home runs. Tomorrow night we're going to hit singles. But it's interesting to see that they've come to some moderation and some kind of a hybrid there that we're not quite sure exactly how it works. Joe Vavra has seen it all. He saw the evolution of this game. He saw it become a four-seam fastball and swing as hard as you can. And I'm not sure what the end result is on that, but he joins us now. Joe, always good to visit with you. How are you, my friend?
Hey, Mike, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, always good to talk to you. As you've watched the evolution of this game and the swing from the heels, and now it seems, do you see, are more teams dialing it back a little bit and saying we can't live with the home runner? What are we seeing here?
You know, I think so. I think it's going to cycle back. You see more guys toning it down, choking up, going the other way. And then you've got the guys that physically are so, they're so used to trying to put everything they got into every swing that they really can't tone it down, and they're going to be the same type of guy. So once you learn that and you become pretty much pull oriented, it's really hard to slow that bat down, and then you basically have a kind of vicious cycle with all the different clubs doing it, and game kind of looks ugly for the old purists that want to see on base percentage, and they want to see batting averages, and they want to see guys put the ball in play, and they're tired of seeing guys, you know, walk back to the bench with runners in scoring position because they struck out looking. And, you know, I think it's going to cycle back, but it is what it is right now. It's just the way that the base hits are weighted differently.
Well, okay, so 235, the average for is pretty low for the American League. That means there's a lot of frustration, a lot of players heading back to the dugouts, whether they, you know, flew out, popped out, struck out, grounded out, whatever it is. It's not fun. What does that do to the psyche of a player, or do they not measure themselves anymore by batting average? Has that all changed?
Well, there's a whole lot more analysis going into it. You know, everybody's hard to pull out. You know, they try to read the pitchers on, you know, their probability of what they're going to throw in certain counts. And it's a lot of information. I mean, we had a lot of trouble with, minor league guys coming up and then trying to remember certain counts and, you know, go through the whole counts with certain pitcher and remember what he's throwing in those counts, and you know, and then they got to look at the little card at the end, and it really kind of takes away from just playing the baseball, see the ball, hit the ball, have natural ability. So they're trying to kind of pre-calculate what's coming up, and then they're going for it. They're just swinging as hard as they can just try to get the end result. So
what you're saying is that you might sit him down beforehand, or somebody might sit him down and say, okay, you're facing Justin Verlander tonight. If the count's 2-1 and there's less than two outs and guy on first and second, he's probably going to throw you this. And that all sounds fine, right, because you want the probabilities in your favor. But now you're sitting in the box and you're going, Now, what was it they said about Verlander? 2-1, two outs, slider. Is that what's happening to some of them?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the starters are easy because, you know, you kind of know what their habits are. The bullpen guys are a little bit more challenging to try to figure out what they, you know, what pitch they like to use in certain counts, a higher percentage. And, you know, I usually try to simplify it. And the more I knew, I think the dumber I got as a hitting coach, because I tried to instill upon the players everything that I knew, and it was really hard for them to grasp it, you know, rather than, you know, let's do this in this situation. This situation presents itself here. What are you going to go up there looking for? And then you get two strikes, you got to choke up, put the ball in play, and then live with it, live with that at bat. So it's just different right now.
Joe Vavra is our guest, former hitting coach for the Minnesota Twins and Detroit Tigers. I talked to Rod Carew during spring training, and we were talking about different philosophies, and obviously it's in stark contrast to the era that he grew up in and the philosophical beliefs that he had as a hitter and a hitting coach. But he made an interesting point to me that I hadn't thought about, Joe, when we were talking, and it merits at least consideration because I think it's an important piece of what you want sports to be about. He said, we're eliminating the small player from the game. We're eliminating the 5'9 and 5'10 kid who can make contact, and we're discouraging him from playing baseball. We have a tough enough time getting kids to play baseball because there used to always be a spot for anybody. There was something you could do. Could you put the ball in play? You're a punch hitter, you're a power hitter. Either way, there's value. You can do something that creates value for the team. And his concern was that we're discouraging too many kids. You know, and you look at some of these, I mean, I don't think people really realize this, Joe, you do. I mean, you look at a few years ago, Baltimore's infield, I think they didn't have a guy under 6'3 or 6'4, and they're not far from that right now. Even the Twins, I mean, what's Kepler 6'4, Buxton 6'2, 6'3, Correa 6'3, 6'4, Sano 6'5. You don't realize this, but it's become a big man's game, and that's not necessarily good for our kids growing up.
No, it's always been a sport where any size, you know, you can fit on the ball field, no matter what size you are. You have something to present. You know, might be a great glove and speed, and others might be a bat, and some guys are bigger and might be a little power. But there are quite a few guys that have, you know, tried to dial it up a notch. You know, there's the Mookie Betts. You know, there's a lot of guys that aren't that big that really can generate a lot of bat speed. You know, Atlanta's got a couple guys. They're pretty small, and they do the job. I mean, you know, I think there's still room for that. It's just really challenging when all these little guys are trying to hit like big guys from, you know, little league on up, and it just doesn't equate for them down. You know, when they start getting to high school and there's a lot of swing and miss going on, they're not going to get looked at too unfavorably by you know, college ranks and professional careers as well.
Well, a few years ago, you were there. I mean, Brian Dozier hit, 42 home runs as second baseman. If you and I were growing up, you said you can get a second baseman, hit 42 home runs, you'd say, who in the heck, is Rogers Hornsby coming back or what? He did that, and he had a good year, but I categorically, I don't know if you consider it a great year the way things all turned out, but that's when I said, boy, there's the turning point, because Dozier learned what it takes to stay in the big leagues, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, he knew what his weakness was, and he attacked his weakness, that high fastball that challenged him up, because that's when the game was kind of changing the strike zone. It was going from a low strike zone to mid, well, I guess, belt line to a little bit higher than the belt line. And then, so the strike zone went a little higher. And guys like Dozier, that are a little small, you know, they're down a little bit. They got to get on top of that. He challenged up top quite a bit, and he made the adjustments, and balls up in the eyes used to go pretty far.
Now, Byron Buxton, when he bats leadoff, sometimes you want your leadoff guy to go deep in counts so people can see it, but that's not the theory with him, is it? It's the first good pitch you get, you take your best rip, right?
I think he's learned over the years, you know, he's got tremendous talents, and I think he's just learned what he can do and what he's really good at, and I think, you know, his approach right now obviously is working for him, so he's staying with him. He's having success, and, you know, if they pitch out of the strike zone, he's way more disciplined than he used to be, so he gets himself some pretty good counts.
Carlos Correa is coming back here shortly, maybe as soon as tomorrow from his injury, but you've seen him more than we have. You played against him. What do you see from him as a hitter?
Well, you know what? He's been that guy that's been able to handle the bat. You know, he's been able to go all 90 degrees, go sideline to or foul pole to foul pole. And yet, you know, when he played in Houston, of course, that left field porch is pretty
enticing.
Pretty short. Enticing. So, you know, you're able to try to get the head out and just kind of pull it. But I think he's really good at different ballparks. I don't recall what he hit, you know, home versus away, but I think he's pretty good because, you know, as far as him staying up the middle, going the other way, he's pretty good at that. So he's one of those guys that can, you know, he's just got that ability. He's got that bat ability. So that's why he's a marquee player he is.
Now last, the Twins are playing at Oakland tonight, and the reputation of the Oakland ballpark is a strange ballpark because it's one of the few, you know, real football stadiums that's used as a baseball park as well. But on the damp nights in May, the ball's not going to travel much at night, has always been the theory. Do you adjust hitting to ballparks and weather conditions, or is that thinking too much if you're a player?
It's kind of thinking too much for the most part. Most guys, you know, they get kind of fooled because you go out to Oakland and it's sunny out there in the afternoon and the weather's a little bit warmer, and then all of a sudden that game time temperature comes in and coolness comes, the ball doesn't travel, and you kind of get a veteran understands that, and you know, guys that has good bat ability, they can move that ball around pretty good and have success out there. A lot of foul ground that always comes into play. That always carries for a couple, three more outs in a game. But I don't think the approach, I don't think we try to get anybody to really change the approach, you know, based on what the weather is going to be at game time versus batting practice.
And how's your son doing?
Well, Taryn has, he started out great in Norfolk. Then he kind of had a hamstring injury that he's nursing along right now. So he's been on the shelf for a few weeks here. So hopefully he'll get himself back here in the next couple of weeks and get going again.
Yeah, Dad's got to go out and watch some baseball. He needs to get healthy.
Yeah, that's for sure. I got the Gophers game on now. I got one, you know, Trey's assistant at the Gophers. I got to watch that. I'm watching that game.
They're playing Omaha tonight, yeah.
Yeah, and Tanner's there because Omaha's in their conference, so he's watching them with, you know, via you know, sitting in the stands because he's scouting them for St. Thomas. So, he's trying to get a one up on him. But anyway.
Good. I'm glad to hear there's no lack of baseball conversation in the Vavra House still.
You know, I try to stay out of it. They talk amongst themselves pretty good on a daily basis, which is great. And then they tie me in. We all talk every day, but they tie me in. We don't get into a lot of theory and stuff like that. They're pretty good about understanding how the game should be played and which way they need to go and how they need to grow in it, you know, with the current trends and everything that's going on within the game.
Joe, appreciate it very much. We'll tap into you again soon, but always good to visit with you.
All right, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Joe Vavra, hitting coach, Minnesota Twins, Detroit Tigers. He mentioned he's got one son playing in the minor leaguers. One's coaching at the University of Minnesota, one at the University of St. Thomas. How would you like to be that at that dinner table, huh? Just pass me those muffins. You know, this muffin reminds me of the curveball I saw last night. The guy was spinning it. Speaking of food, I got fooled. And I should be a veteran enough, old enough, have seen this enough that that I did my homework going in, and I should never get fooled on this. And I was. I was fooled, and I was fooled in a big way. And I regret it again, and I'll probably do it again sometime in my lifetime, but I was fooled. And I just hate it when this happens to me. I'll explain what that is when we come back. You know, we were talking about downtown Minneapolis, downtown St. Paul earlier, and as is my wont, if it's nice out at least, I always try to, between where I park and where I go eat and all those things, I'm walking on Nicollet Mall a lot, and there's a lot to, you know, I've seen a lot over the years there, just a lot of stuff. And today I was walking, and a guy was had a stroller with his baby and his wife or girlfriend, I'm not sure which one, and he said to me, "Hey, remember I met you last summer, and I just had my baby with me." And he still got his baby with him, and his baby's now 11 months instead of 6 months, whatever it was, I don't know. And he said, "Remember I was telling you about how my girl had some problems, and so I was raising this child by myself?" He said, "Well, this is my girl, and she's out." And I assume of some sort of a rehab facility. And he said, "We're good again. We got the family together." And it all came back to me because there was this man in this stroller with this infant kid. And the kid was as cute as you could get. And so we started talking on Nicollet Mall there. And he told me about the situation that he was in. And I just, I like wanted to give him a hug because he's trying to raise this kid by himself. And then mom is now back in the picture. And I met her tonight. And it's like, wow, sometimes there are happy endings, you know? Sometimes it is. It does work out, at least for now. Who knows how long, but at least for now. Before I went to break, Tubbsy, I said that I made a huge mistake. It's a mistake that I've made before. It's a mistake that I vowed I'd never make again, and then I've made it.
I can't believe you'd admit to making a mistake.
And this isn't college and the sorority dance thing, okay?
Okay.
That's a different story.
Oh.
But I'm at the radio station.
Okay.
And I go to the kitchen, I'm heating up my cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. And from time to time, as you know, people will leave food, or they'll make food, they'll make extra food, they'll just leave it out there. It doesn't happen as often as it used to.
Was it like out on the counter? Is that where it was?
Yeah,
or
above
the
microwave. Yeah, it was above the microwave in this case.
Okay.
And basically, it's their way of saying, hey, you know, help yourself. I was making whatever, and, you know, here it is. Or, okay. You know, if it's Halloween candy, things like that.
Boy,
Right. It doesn't happen very much. We hardly have anybody that comes in this building anymore. But it used to happen more frequently, and it did tonight. There were cookies.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not bad.
And some would grab one cookie. I can see they're homemade because they all got different shapes and forms. So I can see they're not bought in a store, you know, cookie cutter.
They were made with love.
They're made with love, yeah. And you can see because you can tell somebody made these.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, here's the critical mistake that I made. I made it before.
Uh-oh. Are there still cookies before we get?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That's what I needed.
But let me just give you the word.
Uh-oh.
Now, it depends on your taste, okay?
Okay.
Okay. I thought they were chocolate chip cookies, which I love.
Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. You did not make that mistake.
They were raisins.
Oh, God. Oh.
They were raisins. Yep.
No. Gross.
Yep. Yep. And I'm walking back, and I thought, you know, and now you see them. And at first I thought, oh, man, I don't know if I should have a cookie or not. And then, yeah, I'm going to have a cookie. Now you're looking forward to it, right? So you grab it, and I've got my cup of coffee. I'm waiting for my coffee to heat up because I want to have one with the other, and let's make this symbiotic and all those things. And I'm walking back, and I'm almost in this newsroom. I take a bite, and I go, oh, no, that's not what I
thought. That's what that noise was.
Yeah, that was it. That's what it was. Yep.
That was
shriek of a raisin cookie.
Oh, man.
Yep, and I'm sure that people that like raisin cookies are going, well, I got no problem with that. I do, because I hate raisin cookies.
You and me.
But I love chocolate chip cookies.
You and me, same page.
Okay, so I have no problem if I know it's a raisin cookie. I won't eat it.
Yeah.
But when I think it's a chocolate chip, it's like a double whammy.
So you took a big bite and then you realized.
Because I could see the chocolate chips in the middle,
uh-huh.
And I wanted to get to those.
You
in the
wanted
first
to get
bite.
To that, right.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Right off the top.
You're not a nibbler.
Well, sometimes I am, but I had to come back on the air. So I said, I got to get to that chocolate chip.
I got you.
To satisfy what I need satisfied.
Right.
And then I'll work from there, right? I'll nibble after that, but I need to get to that chocolate chip, which was kind of the middle of the cookie. So I took the big bite and I go, oh, no. It's a raisin.
See, who would do that?
Like, I don't know,
who hates us enough to make raisin cookies?
Yeah, I know. I mean, they don't even know us anymore. We work at night.
They
we don't even know
here.
The people that work during the day.
Max,
and they
set
us up. They probably got a camera up there somewhere.
That's
intentional. I wonder if Steve Simpson did that.
Where? I won't do that. I'm nice.
Okay, but I'll find out tomorrow morning. I will find out who did that. There are things that, okay, it's funny, ha, 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 gotcha.
That's just me.
But not to those extremes.
No, that is.
You don't
that
do
is
that to coworkers
that, is
that you work
for.
With. You know, even if you don't like us, you should respect us enough not to put, and you know that they knew. I would think it was a chocolate chip cookie.
They knew what they're doing.
They knew exactly what they were doing. And that's why I don't trust the Daysiders.
They were baiting the hook?
They were, man. And that's why I don't trust the Daysiders. I'm not saying I don't like them. I'm saying I don't trust them. Go look at those cookies. And just, okay, as you're walking up, if you don't look really close, you tell me if you think it's a chocolate chip or raisin.
I don't even
want
to go near them. I just don't
blame you.
I'll put on an N95 mask and go by, and I'll like I'll get on a hazmat suit and throw
there
them away
go.
Before I
yep.
even, like,
yep.
oh, gross.
Yep.
Well, thank you for falling on the sword.
I fell on the sword
you
for all of us.
You fell on the sword, Maxie.
Let me tell you, somebody's got a price to pay tomorrow morning. Where, you know, I used to do stuff to Ron Sharon. It wasn't nearly as bad as this.
Yeah.
When we come back, he's the starting pitcher for an NCAA tournament team, a local team. Oh, yeah, he's in his seventh year of college. He's been playing baseball all seven. How could he? We'll explain when we come back. Welcome back. Twins in Oakland, not far away. Baseball edition of Sports to the Max, because we've got some good baseball stories here. Eric Newman will pitch for his team. First round of the NCAA tournament coming up at the end of this week. He plays for Crown College. And he pitched his team not just him, but he threw the big game and deciding game, and here he sits. He's a Buffalo native, Buffalo, Minnesota, that is, and he is now in his seventh year of college, still pitching. How about that for a factoid? He joins us now. Eric, thank you for joining us.
Mike, Max, how you doing?
Good. Now tell me, I was talking to you earlier today. Take me through this game. You started out going to Crookston, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Out of high school, you went to Crookston to play some baseball, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, and take us through how you end up at the seventh year.
You know, it's not an easy journey, but it's one that few make. But I redshirted my freshman year there, and then I ended up playing two seasons there.
Okay, so you played two seasons. So you're a junior, but you had played. You're a sophomore eligibility wise, then, huh? All right, excuse me. You're a junior
correct.
Going into your next year after 3 years.
Yeah, academically, I was a junior, and then I was a sophomore athletically.
Yep.
And so, yeah, after that, I transferred over to Crown, where I was, I think I was still a junior, actually, because not all my credits transferred. And then I was a junior athletically and played that season, 2019.
Okay.
Then 2020 rolled around. I was a senior. And that season got cut short due to the
pandemic.
I
got you. So 2020, you're heading into what you think is your senior year, and COVID hit. So you worked out, you played as much as you could play, and some teams got a few games in, but we cut it short, right?
Yeah, I think we got about six games in.
Yep.
And then, our season actually got canceled mid-game, which was a lot of fun.
Mid-game?
Yeah, mid-game.
It was where were you playing? What happened? What were the circumstances?
Our athletic director, you know, as things were kind of unraveling with the pandemic, our athletic director called our coach and said, you got to get these guys back on a plane and get them home.
Like right now, huh?
Yeah. And I mean, it didn't happen right now. We were stuck there for like 2 or 3 days down in Florida, but it was not a bad 2 or 3 days to be down in Florida.
No, what the heck? You got nothing better to do. You're just going to have to wear a mask when you get back here or down there. What's the difference, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there we got to sit by a pool, so it was pretty nice.
So you go through that, but the year doesn't count against you, right?
Yeah, athletically it did not count against me.
It's your fifth year of school, your fourth year of competition, but your fourth year down doesn't count, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So now you can come back and play last year, but you get a free year on top of it, right?
Yeah, I came back 2021. Athletically that did not count towards my eligibility. So then I was able to come back for his seventh year.
That's unbelievable. I mean, I suppose there's a few people that threaded that needle in all of this. The only thing you had to do was you've already graduated a couple years ago. So you had to go find a master's degree, right?
You know, I did graduate in 2020 with my bachelor's. And then I was determined to keep playing ball. And I was, pursue my education even more. So I was like, why not get a master's?
And so that's what you set out to do. And there's a certain criteria you have to meet, right, in terms of classes and courses to be eligible, correct?
Yeah, you still have to have be considered a full-time student, which I believe it's two classes a semester. They kind of do it weird. At Crown, they do it in mods now, so it'd be like four a semester. But and then you have to maintain a 3.0 GPA, but, through it all, we did it, and we just finished my seventh year. So
you will leave there with what, a bachelor's degree and what, a master's degree? What will it look like when you're done here?
So I do still have to take about two more classes for my master's, so I'll be taking some courses this summer and finishing it up.
Well, you should apply for some kind of hardship and see if you can get an eighth year.
There's been some jokes that I can, I'm almost a doctor, but.
Okay, but on top of that, you've had this special season because Crown College is going where they haven't been before. What has this been like the last few weeks?
It's been really unbelievable. I mean, a lot of ups and downs, because we were in the running to have the best record in conference, but unfortunately we didn't make it, but. We won the one that matters, and that's the UMAC championship. So it's been a whirlwind of emotions, and it's been really exciting.
You threw that last game. What was that like last week?
Oh, man, that last game. I mean, because I threw the first game, and I threw 127 pitches.
Whoa.
Only six innings. And then, you know, I come back on a day's rest, and not even a day's rest, because I was still thrown between games on that Friday just in case they needed me.
Yep.
But, yeah, then I come back, and I throw 100, and I want to say it was either 54 or 64 pitches.
Whoa! And,
yeah.
You're never going to play in the big leagues. They won't let you do that.
Yeah.
They'll kick you out of it if you... But in between, by the way, you also played a couple of amateur baseball town ball games with your home Buffalo team. They let you DH, right?
Yeah, the Buffalo Bulldogs, they were kind enough to let me DH. I did not pick up a ball that day. There's some disputes about my at-bats. I mean, I do believe I did get a hit.
Yep.
But I did sort up twice. Some brutal, embarrassing strikeouts.
Okay, well, we'll work on that once we get through the seventh year and the tournament coming up. What are the players that now, when I was talking to you this afternoon, you said, you know, I'm not the only one that might have a gray hair or two. You've got a lot of guys in that 23, 24-year-old range, huh?
Yeah, there's quite a few. Bailey Sarto, our third baseman, he's in his seventh year as well. He redshirted at a JUCO as well and kind of took the same path as me. There's quite a few fifth year guys too. Everybody's got their own path in life, and ours just kind of happened to take us through 7 years of college baseball, and that's okay with me.
You're 25 years old though, and do you realize? Are you able to put into context the difference between being an 18 or 19-year-old freshman and a 25-year-old? Because those are huge growing years and maturity years. I mean, you just understand yourself and the game so much better.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think about it back to when I was a freshman at Crookston, and I thought I knew everything about anything, and not the case at all. But, no, you know, just to grow like that as a college ball player and, you know, as a man in general, it's been a lot of fun. And I have, you know, just the game of baseball to thank and all these coaches. I really just can't even put it into words just how grateful I am, to be honest.
Yeah, so no regrets, right?
Maybe a few, but, you know, none worth mentioning.
Yeah, I got you. But what you're saying, this has not been it's a path less traveled, but it's not a bad path to take.
You know, not at all. I would do it all over again.
And who do you play in the first round?
We play Webster College.
Okay. And that's in St. Louis, is it?
Yeah, I believe so. And also Bethel is going to be in
same bracket, right?
Yeah.
And you're going to throw game one on Friday?
I am going to throw game one on Friday, yep. Oh,
that'll be fun. And then when you get done, whenever it's all done, you apply for Social Security, right? No.
Yeah, you know what? I got a nice 401k that I can...
Roll that over, man. Tell those freshmen that, right?
Yeah, start investing your money now, kids.
All right. Hey, great stuff, Eric. Congratulations on your success and your unique story. We'll put it to TV on Thursday night as well. But thank you so much for giving us some time. Congratulations and good luck. Enjoy every minute of it.
Hey, thank you so much, Max. I really appreciate you having me on here.
You bet, Eric Newman. Seventh year college baseball for Crown College, and they're playing in the Division III NCAA tournament this Friday. Great stories come out of this stuff. Take a break, come back. I've got some more good stuff for Tubbsy here that I haven't even used. You're saying, well, you must have used up all your good stuff tonight. Believe it or not, I have not. When we come back. Welcome back, Sports with Max. Tubbsy, I told you I'm not all over these primaries and stuff, but it looks like Dr. Oz is having a tough time tonight, huh? At least early on.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I don't know, it's behind me here, so
he's at 23% and the leader's at 32%. Politics, tough game.
Yeah.
Tough game. I don't care what your name recognition is going in, tough game.
Yeah, and I hear that Kathy Barnett, I hear that she's got a little bit of steam. Okay. And it looks like she's like 4 points behind in the primary. I think the two that are kind of on everybody's mind, number one, Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania, but I also think Madison Cawthorn in North Carolina is also one that people are keeping an eye on. Other than that, I don't know. Yeah, kind of like you're saying, I don't know if people really have any interest in these unless it's local. But Yeah, I mean, Dr. Oz, I mean...
It's Dr. Oz.
It's
Doc. I don't even know why, but he's on every magazine cover for like 2 years, you know?
Yeah, I don't...
I don't know if you buy yourself on those or what, but it's like, what more can he tell me, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. He's on TV, and he says he's a doctor, so...
And he made enough money that he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah. Sometimes you can buy yourself that publicity.
Sometimes you can, yeah. Now, I stumbled across on Netflix last night Mitt Romney documentary about when he ran for president in 2008 and 2012. And I hadn't seen it before, so I just clicked on it, and I ended up watching most of it. And it's kind of behind the scenes. Now, obviously, you know, he probably had full editorial control because it focuses just on his family as they go through this process. And his wife, who has been diagnosed with MS, mm-hmm. he's got five boys, and they're personality-driven kids, good-looking family, all those things. And they go to the primaries, and they go to the debates and things like that with him, and eventually he wins. He didn't win it in 08, but in 12 he won the Republican nomination, lost to Obama, and then the debates with Obama, he wins the first debate. But as you watch this, you realize it is, you know, you've got all these people around you,
mm-hmm.
but it's still on you.
Yeah.
And it is a lonely, at times, life, because you have to make the decision. Is that your campaign guy could tell you one thing, your family could tell you one thing, and a lot of people are telling you what you want to hear. Right?
At the end of the day, it's your name.
It's your name. And a lot of people are telling you, boy, you killed it in that debate. And, mm-hmm. and everybody else is going, I don't think it was quite that good, you know?
Yeah.
And you have to be able to have the honesty to say, you know what, I didn't do as well as I should have. I'm going to have to change course here. I'm going to have to do these things. But it's a lot more lonely than you ever imagined. You're sitting up in hotel rooms eating, you know, spaghetti and, on a couch because that's what you do. Because you just want to get something to eat, you know?
Yeah, and then, I mean, with all the, you know, all the traveling and all the
campaigning. Yeah, all the traveling,
and all
too.
The canvassing and everything. Yeah. It just, I don't know, I look at
that. That's what's kept you out of politics, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that and the fact that I'm too selfish and don't care what anybody else said. No, I'm kidding.
Plus, I mean, there are if you have certain things in your background, they don't let you run, right?
Yeah, it's the skeletons in my closet, Maxie. Yeah. That's really what's got, you know, I can't let people, you know, get into my history. You know,
yeah.
It's a lot of work, and you hear about it, and you mentioned that, you know, Netflix has done a really good job with a lot of their documentaries. I thought they've, you know, for a while, you know, kind of got away from it, but I feel like they've done a really good job with that. But when you said that it was, you know, that he had creative control, I have an issue with those to the point.
I do too. And I know you're probably not going to get access if you don't give them creative control, right? You're not going to let somebody just run a camera 24/7 on your life and then say, do what you want.
And then you spin the narrative, because it's kind of like what we're now hearing about The Last Dance with Michael Jordan. We're starting to, Jordan had, you know, creative control or producer rights. It's like, well, no wonder it's going to come off and it's going to paint him in a certain light. It's like,
absolutely. But the other side of that is, well, he's not going to do it unless he gets that.
Yeah.
So you're never going to get a peek at all.
It's the catch 22.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've always had a problem with that, because it's like, if you want to tell the true unfiltered story, you've got to have an objective crew.
But then you can't get access.
And you can't get access. So,
So, I mean, to me, it's like it's better than nothing, because you get some peaks and at least some understandings, you know?
Yeah.
And for him, it was a lot about his family and how they stuck together through this. And, the other part that I thought was really telling was that as serious as it was, they didn't take themselves too seriously. They understood mm-hmm. that they could lose, and then they would go back to life as it was, and they accepted that. But it was, so some of the parts were – you know, interesting because of the, you know, you go, oh, you know, and he had a different, you know, he's rich, right?
Yeah.
So you're going back to, you know, yes, it's a bitter pill to swallow, but it's not like you were counting on that job.
Yeah. I mean, you're doing
like it. Like Dr. Oz tonight is finding out.
Yeah. I mean, whatever happens, Dr. Oz is still going to have a boatload of
Why
money.
Why do you think Dr. Phil has never run?
Dr. Phil? I don't know. To me, it's just a lot of a vanity project, to me, is the way that I look at it. I don't know if, I mean, because, you know, Dr. Phil got famous off of Oprah. So I don't know, you know, really what his, I don't know what Dr. Oz's qualifications are.
That's what I was getting at. I don't blame him. I mean, what's anybody's qualifications, right? I mean, there's a lot of people that you go, well, if you say, well, they've been the legislator a long time, well, does that make them qualified, or do we want somebody that's not part of the establishment?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? All right. Well, we know this. When you want to get away from it all, you go to a baseball game, don't you? And that's where we're going to take you next. It's the Twins. excuse me, the Oakland A's. It's Corey, it's Dan, it's Chris, and they're next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.